Picture standing in your kitchen at midnight, hands stained crimson from pitting 8 quarts of cherries, a lone firefly blinking hypnotically against your bedroom screen. Your marriage has ended. Your career has vanished. Your bank account shows $40 for the week's groceries. This is where transformation begins, not in triumph, but in the quiet decision to feed yourself well anyway. When Robin Mather lost everything in a single devastating week in 2009, she retreated to a 650-square-foot Michigan cottage with a poodle, a parrot, and a radical commitment to eat beautifully on almost nothing, sourcing food within 100 miles. What sounds like deprivation became something else entirely, a masterclass in how abundance hides in unexpected places, how community forms around shared meals, and how the simple act of preserving strawberries can preserve your sanity too. The enormous snapping turtle advancing toward me wasn't just terrifying, she was a messenger. When the DNR officer explained she was 60 to 80 years old, laying eggs in my driveway since before any houses existed here, something clicked. That same day, I bought honeyoy strawberries at the farmer's market. When ancient turtles move, strawberries ripen. Nature operates on a different schedule entirely. Michigan's asparagus announces spring for 6 precious weeks. May brings early beets from solar-heated hoop houses. August arrives with cicadas signaling sweet corn season, canning kernels, freezing some, making creamed corn, preparing great-great-grandmother Emery's mustardy relish. Green beans require triple treatment, pressure canning, freezing, dehydrating, because August's abundance must carry you through February's scarcity. Reading nature's calendar creates a deeper connection to the land's rhythms, teaching you to appreciate each season's gifts without longing for them when they've passed. When my neighbor Wonder Wally appeared days after my divorce with a box of peeping golden comet chicks, I didn't realize he was handing me a lifeline disguised as poultry. These tiny fluff balls lived in my kitchen for 5 weeks before graduating to their barn red coop, positioned to catch morning sun and afternoon shade. The daily routine became meditation, checking nesting boxes, refreshing their dust bath, ensuring their water wasn't clogged. 6 chickens producing nearly a dozen eggs every 2 days created abundance. I froze excess whites in ice cube trays, stored yolks with salt, and learned that unwashed eggs retain their protective bloom and keep for months refrigerated. But chickens provide more than eggs. They offer daily entertainment with distinct personalities, a sense of purpose, and connection to agricultural traditions. Each morning while watching them scratch and peck, I enjoyed coffee from Chiapas cooperatives, beans and roasted myself in a converted popcorn popper. As winter approached, I banked straw against the coop walls and installed a heated water bowl. Their continued egg production through Michigan's harshest months felt like a small miracle. Each warm egg represented both sustenance and hope. Guke's Market in Middleville displays thank you notes from 4-H children whose animals they purchased at the county fair. Their freezers hold locally raised beef, pork, and lamb, all vacuum sealed. Their bacon is exceptional, thick slices with firm white fat that produces little grease and delivers rich, smoky flavor. Don Gukes explained how his grandfather, Arthur, started the business in 1929, choosing this location for access to creek and river water. Federal regulations have reduced small meatpacking operations nationwide to a quarter of their former numbers. Despite this, Gukes's 5-person operation processes about 600 beef cows, 800 hogs, and 500 lambs annually, maintaining quality through slower speeds than industrial packers. Unlike massive operations where foodborne illness outbreaks spread across states, small packing houses better contain problems due to their local markets. Don remains optimistic, despite concerns about younger families lacking cooking knowledge. Though his children likely won't take over when he retires, he believes someone will preserve this vital local enterprise. Finding meat from places like Gukes means knowing exactly where your food comes from and supporting families who've dedicated generations to their craft. Each morning when adding milk to my coffee, I silently thank Doug and Louisa Westendorp and their children from Nashville who operate Westview Farm, with 80 Holsteins providing milk bottled under the Mooville Creamery label. Though more expensive, their creamline milk is something I refuse to compromise on. I'd rather go without milk entirely. In fact, seeing Mooville milk in the local grocery helped convince me to buy the cottage. Locavores often struggle with dairy due to complex regulations and lack of origin labeling. I prefer Mooville's cream top milk because it's not homogenized, allowing cream to rise naturally. Their cows have access to green pastures and sunshine rather than confinement. The Westendorps pledged not to use RBGH, and their dairy has won numerous awards for exceptionally clean milk. I also buy their butter in 1-pound blocks directly from the dairy, freezing extra portions. Beyond milk and butter, I've had to get creative. I make my own yogurt, which I can strain to create Greek-style yogurt, whipping cream substitute, or yogurt cheese. I also make fromage blanc, a simple, cultured fresh cheese similar to Chèvre. For hard cheeses, I've found Michigan producers like Williams Cheese Company, which has made various cheeses since 1945. I order their cheese trim, odds and ends from cutting larger blocks, at remarkably reasonable prices. Supporting local dairy means knowing your cows have names, not numbers. When Wally cuts my grass unasked, I repay him with homemade strawberry preserves. We've developed a bartering system. His garden vegetables for my preserves. A hand-knitted winter hat for his ice fishing. My friend Jim shares a secret acre of wild black raspberries on state land, reviving childhood foraging memories. These exchanges are built on mutual care, not money. I've grown wary of the dogmatic Eat Local movement's militancy. My motivations are simpler: economics and quality. Farm Stand owner Tom Robertson challenged my assumptions, frustrated that farmers markets get tax-supported free rides while he pays utilities and property taxes. His perspective revealed an overlooked truth: supporting the entire local food ecosystem matters, not just farmers markets. I support Michigan-made products like Jiffy Mix and shop at locally owned Spartan Foods, even when they sell products I might ideologically oppose. This makes me a heretic in some Eat Local circles, but my decisions prioritize community over politics. These relationships have become my foundation, creating wealth measured not by bank balances, but by knowing someone will plow your driveway in a blizzard because you made them the best cherry preserves they've ever tasted. When John invited me to host his visiting family that winter, I hesitated. My home was modest, my budget tight. But I prepared what I had: homemade bread with olive oil and dukkah, sharp Colby cheese, spiced pecans, and a blueberry tart. The evening filled my small house with laughter and warmth. This gathering revealed how much I'd grown. I'd weathered my first serious winter storm, my wood stove proved reliable, and my mindset had shifted from right now panic to be prepared confidence. What began as retreat from disaster had become deliberate, meaningful life. True wealth isn't measured by square footage or salary. It's creating abundance from simple ingredients and building community through shared meals. In a world demanding more money, bigger houses, and constant convenience, maybe the real luxury is knowing where your eggs came from, having strawberry preserves brighten February's bleakness, and neighbors who show up because that's what neighbors do. The feast you've been looking for has been nearby all along.